Blog Talk Radio.
Our shoes are taking us from ballet to Broadway and more. Coming up next on How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's Thursday, June 27th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today. We love to hear from you, so please call in to listen live or ask questions at 714-242-5248, and you can also email us here at the studio at goodvibeproductions@gmail.com. That phone number to call in is 714-242-5248. So we'd love to hear from you. We have a fabulous guest today. My guest today is a remarkable woman. She has sat on all sides of the production table as talent agent, casting director, producer, and director, initially casting and directing interactive material for Mattel Toys and Landmark Entertainment. She then segued to the Tishman Agency, which is now known as TGMD, where she worked as an agent and founded their animation department. So it's a pleasure to welcome a woman of many talents, Laurel Vanderlyn. Welcome, Laurel.
Hey there, hi there, ho there.
And what a great show. I love that you know you're just succinct in what you have to say, and that's it.
Not all the time, but occasionally.
occasionally. Well, in the intro, I mentioned that you started from ballet to Broadway. You started out as a dancer, and I'm interested in learning more how your career as a dancer on Broadway with the likes of Gower Champion helped you to take this leap or made this leap. You made this leap to from dance to the voiceover production. How did that happen?
It's a really good question. I have to think about how that happened. I think, first of all, what you have to realize as a dancer, even though we don't like to acknowledge it, and it made my blood run cold 8 times a week in a chorus line, standing on the stage of the Schubert Theater, there's a number in the second act called What I Did for Love, and the question is, what do you do when you can't dance anymore? And it's just an absolutely horrific question because none of us want to face it, even though we know we have to at some point, and it's always in the back of your mind. And I would stand on stage 8 times a week and just break out in a cold sweat thinking, what am I going to do when I can't dance anymore? And for reasons that I couldn't explain at the time, my rationale at this point is because I was so intrinsically linked to sound from a very, very early age, it actually made a lot of sense for me to segue into something that involves sound. My mother was a professional opera singer, so from the time I was a zygote, I heard Carmen. I contend that I came out of the womb singing the habanera from Carmen because I heard it constantly. She performed while she was pregnant with me.
No wonder you're so talented.
My father was a classical trombonist, and I grew up hearing music my entire life, and my mother used to just park me underneath the grand piano because she was either coaching or rehearsing or whatever. So as an infant, I would be underneath this grand piano watching. I have very distinct memory of this, interestingly enough, because I was obviously an infant. I couldn't walk yet, but I sure remember seeing those keys go up and down from the underside of the baby grand. And I remember very distinctly thinking, that's really cool. That key makes that sound. That key makes that sound. That key makes that sound. And, of course, when you're dancing, you have some of the best music in the world supporting you. And you cannot function without all that music. And then on top of all that, then I have my father, the classical trombonist, and I just was constantly surrounded by excellent sound my entire life. So as much of an anomaly as that seems on the surface, it really isn't, because, again, I was so intrinsically linked to sound right from the get-go, it made a lot of sense to segue into that direction. And, of course, the way I teach voiceover is from a musical basis because everything is, as you've heard me say, black dots on white paper, whether it's the copy on the page or it's the black dots on a score. It's all the same thing. Everything has to be phrased. You have key changes in voiceover, whether it's a 12-second commercial or an 8-hour audiobook, which has a lot of key changes. But you have all of that within anything you do in voiceover. It's all music. So it made a lot of sense having been surrounded by music my whole life.
You're unique in that way. I don't think I've ever really come across anyone who has...
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there is anyone else out there that teaches it from that basis. Not that I'm aware of, anyway.
No, not that I'm aware of either. And so I was going to ask the question of what qualities of your theatrical background, your musical background, your dance background do you bring to the voiceover table? And it is you made a great analogy at one time about the voice as an instrument, and you likened it to a piano. So expand upon that a little bit.
Well, every voice is a different instrument. I mean, you in orchestra, you have four sections of an orchestra. You have percussion, you have brass, you have winds, you have strings. And the human voice... In fact, the viola is supposed to be the closest instrument to the human voice. That's a string instrument. And, you know, some people are trombones, and some people are trumpets, and some people are French horns, and some people are pianos, which actually is a percussive instrument. Some people are wind instruments, and they're flutes or they're clarinets. And that's a game we play in class at the Radio Ranch, which is, what instrument of the orchestra am I? And I like to involve the class with that, saying, okay, for example, let's use Lauren. And, gee, guys, what instrument do you think Lauren is? And I always have my ideas as to what I think a client's vocal quality is, what instrument it might match. And then from there, I think that helps the actor a lot if they think of themselves as, say, an alto sax. And it does two things. One, it encourages you to orchestrate your instrument, to fine-tune your instrument, and it also takes the actor out of him or herself so that you cease to be turned in on yourself and can start focusing outward as if you were holding an alto sax and articulating that instrument. And it gets the actor outside of themselves so that they can work more effectively than constantly turning in on themselves, which can lead to a lot of negativity because actors are brutal. All artists are. Dancers, God, I was terrible as a dancer. I beat myself up all the time. If I wasn't perfect, I would just have all these psychological downturns and would be furious with myself, and I'd stand in front of the mirror and make myself do pirouettes for a half an hour until I would do eight from one preparation. That doesn't do you any good. I learned that the hard way. All you do is frustrate yourself and become angrier. So what it amounts to is, in order to get the actor outside of themselves so that they can articulate their instrument, then I turn you into an instrument. And I find it works very, very well. So much of what actors go through, put themselves through, they don't have to put themselves through. And having been talent from the time I was a kid, I started working professionally when I was 12, it's much easier if you just let things happen and don't negate yourself and don't criticize yourself. And
good luck.
Everybody makes mistakes. Well, yeah, I mean, it takes years to learn how to just let something go. And if you're doing eight performances a week, trust me, they're not all going to be perfect. You do your best. But, you know, there are times you're going to screw up on stage, not because you want to, but just because it happens and we're all human. And it's not the end of the world. The same thing happens in the booth. You think you're going to read an eight-hour finished material audiobook and not stumble a couple of times? Oh, please. It's not the end of the world. But you have to realize that and just not let it bother you. And that takes a lot of time in the saddle to get to that point.
Well, what I like...
That was not succinct. That was verbose, but there you go.
I love it. It was wonderful. But what I also love about the instrument analogy is that I think a lot of people that perhaps come to the famous radio ranch to take voiceover classes with you feel that there's a distinctive voice out there that they have to mimic. And you use the analogy of the piano so beautifully that, yes, some, because how many times have people come to you or called you up wanting to learn more about the voiceover industry and say, well, you know, my friend said that I have a voice for radio, or for voiceover, rather. And you have said, well, yes, there are people that have Steinways and there are people that have uprights, but you teach people how to know what their instrument is and be able to play it.
Well, that's the operative, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we do get a lot of calls as to, oh yes, everybody tells me I have a great voice. Well, I've got to tell you, the first when I hear that come out of someone's mouth, my first thought is, okay, we're in trouble already. it has nothing to do with the God-given instrument. If you have an absolutely phenomenal God-given instrument, well, good for you, but it doesn't matter if you have the equivalent of a concert Steinway or the equivalent of a Baldwin upright. The important thing is what you do with it. I use the analogy, you can have a concert Steinway in your living room, but if you don't learn how to articulate it, you're never going to play Beethoven's Emperor's Fifth Concerto. You're just going to end up with chopsticks. And it's still a gorgeous instrument, but you don't know what to do with it, so what good is the gorgeous instrument? And there are voice actors out there that, the majority of them, who don't have exceptional voices at all, but they know what to do with them. They know how to express themselves through that instrument, and they make you think that you're hearing a lot more than you are, which is the true test, is can you take your garden variety average American voice, male or female, and become expressive with it. That's what we're looking for. It's not the actual tone that puts the voiceover over the mark. It is what lies beneath. It's the undertones and the overtones of the voice that attract us, not the tonic note, the undertone and overtone, the subtext, what happens in between the black notes on the paper. Or as Stravinsky said, music happens in the white spaces. We need to hear the white spaces in the voice, and that's what makes a voiceover artist is what lies beneath. And that's what's so exciting about it and what makes it so fascinating and so much fun to work with.
Well, I think another benefit of what you have to bring to the table is because of your Broadway stage experience, you also are helping the artist to create a visual, because that's how you see your end product. So by seeing what you need for the end product, you are guiding the voiceover artist to help see that visual as well, because it is voiceover acting, and there's nothing, there are no costumes, no sets, nothing to help you create the character that you may need to create, if you're doing an animation or something. So that's beneficial.
No, very, very true. Well, and I would, of course, work that way from my background as a dancer, both ballet and Broadway, because, of course, everything we do in dance is visual. And a dancer spends a significant amount of his or her life in front of a mirror in class making lines with his or her body. So everything is line, is form, choreography. You know, you're the 30-second swan on the right, but by the same token, you have to fit into the geometric pattern that the choreographer has assigned to the company. If you're doing a solo, you're making lines and patterns with your body in the air. Everything is visual for a dancer, absolutely everything. And therefore, of course, I'm going to translate that over immediately to what we do in voiceover. You have to, in your mind's eye, for the very reason that you cited, you don't have sets, you don't have costumes, you don't have anything to help you physically. So we, as the directors, have to get in there and give that to you so that you can see that in your mind's eye. The environment that a scene, in which a scene takes place, is critical to any form of acting, and voiceover is acting. So, of course, when you see a movie, you're either on location or in a set. You see a stage play, you're there watching something that is happening on a stage, or you're actually on the stage in the set. It's always fun when the set shows up. You know, you spend all those hours in rehearsal, and then the set shows up, and it's like, whoa, this is really happening. It's very exciting, and that improves everyone's performance the second you get into the set shows up, the second you get into costume, all of that. Your performance changes immediately. but we don't have that in voiceover. So as a director on the other side of the glass, I have to give that to you so that you can put yourself in that environment in your mind's eye and therefore react the way that that character would react in that environment. The visual is very important. You can't operate in a vacuum, not at all. And it's one of the things that film actors, in particular film actors, when they decide they're going to try voiceover, it just totally freaks them out because they don't have a set, they don't have makeup, they don't have hair. They can show up in their pajamas, we don't care. And that throws them because it's just them and the person on the other side of the glass saying, okay, let's do that line again. It's very strange. They feel like they're out there on a high wire with no net, and you'll hear that comment from everybody, from Meg Ryan to Tom Hanks and everyone in between. But the visual is very, very important. You may not see it in reality, but you sure as heck have to see it in your head.
Well, that's what you give. I think we spoke before the show a day or so before, and I had mentioned to you that you're probably an anomaly because what is probably out there in reality as far as directors isn't exactly what you give your students. You're really giving them tools to go out to any real-life audition, and if you have a crappy director, you can create your own visual and create a wonderful audition based on the tools that you're given. And so it doesn't matter what you're given out in the real world. You have a plethora of tools to choose from to make your audition the way it should be.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up the word tools because that's exactly what we try to do. It is what we do. We want to arm you with a toolkit that's quite substantial. Because when you get out there, you're going to get some good directors, you're going to get some mediocre directors, and you're going to get some real clunkers, too. That's just the way it works. And I had the privilege of working with Gower Champion, who was absolutely brilliant in everything he did, and I also had the direct antithesis with another director who directed the ill-fated Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. And his idea of working with actors and working with talent was he would come in, put a chair in the center of the rehearsal hall, sit down, look at us, and say, okay, go.
Right, good luck with that. But I guess he expected you're a professional, so you know how to do it.
Well,
on a certain level.
When you work with Gower Champion, you better be a professional because he demanded perfection of all of us as well. He should have, but boy, he gave you something to work with. As opposed to just having a director say, okay, let's do the scene. No blocking, no motivation, nothing. And, you know, this is professional theater. This is Broadway. There's no two ways about it. So there's a range right there. We see the same thing in voiceover. And it's a matter of having those tools up your sleeve at all points in time. And when you are challenged with a director that isn't so great or a set of circumstances that becomes very difficult, hopefully we've given you that simulated situation in class, which I'm sure we have because I'm adamant that we will. And you can at least say, okay, I've been through this drill. I know how to handle it. I'm going to pull out this particular crescent wrench right now, and that will get me through the session. So we do give you the opportunity to have real life experiences, both good and bad, in our classes. We have mock auditions. We try to be bad directors from time to time, which is a laugh.
That's brilliant. Give it all to us, right?
We try. It's hard being a bad director. It really is. It's very difficult. But we try to do that too, so that you have the idea that you get the idea that, wow, I'm not always going to have somebody who can articulate what they want from me. And therefore, I'm going to just have to take the high wire across the Colorado River, like our friend Mr. Wallenda did the other day, with no net, and get to the other side all by myself.
I know, but you give the artist the opportunity to say, okay, I'm not getting anything. Maybe it's not even on the copy or from the director, but now I know I can think, what questions do I need to ask in order to help clarify what's on the page?
Good, and questions are something that you should always feel at liberty to ask anybody, anywhere, anytime. And frankly, from my perspective, if an actor comes in and asks me a question before they audition, I immediately fall madly in love with them. because it means they're thinking and they're interested in the job. I think one of the best tools you could possibly have up your sleeve is to figure out, gee, I want to ask a question when I come in. What question can I ask from this copy? And walk in the door and say, do you mind if I ask you a question? At which point they'll just think, oh, thank God, an actor who thinks, yay. And you
That's
already
so
go
rare these days,
points.
Right?
Yeah, it is. I hate to tell you, but yeah, it is. And the second an actor asks me a question, I just think, okay, then I'm interested in this person because they're on top of their game. And it's just a great icebreaker, too. And it shows us that you're interested in what we're doing and you want to bring something to the party. And that just tells me volumes about an actor. I really think it's one of the best things you can do when you walk into an audition or a session and say, gee, could I ask you a question? I'm right there in the palm of your hand the second you do that. So that's a good technique.
That's a good opener. You had me at hello, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Very good. I forget who wrote the screenplay, but God love him.
That's right.
That's one of the best lines out there.
Now, you run the voiceover school. You're the instructor and producer at the famous Radio Ranch here in Los Angeles, California.
I'm the director of the voiceover
Sherman
school,
Oak,
yeah.
Director. So what types of classes do you offer at the ranch?
Everything in voiceover. There are five disciplines of voiceover, which we define as commercial and animation, audiobook, narration, animation and video game. We produce a lot of video games at the Radio Ranch. Animation, audiobook, promo. So there are five different disciplines, and we do teach all of them. And we also produce all of those disciplines at the Radio Ranch. So we're we like to refer to ourselves as a working ranch from 9 to 5, and then the school takes over from 7 to 10. So we are actively producing video games, commercials, documentaries during the day, and then our students come in and learn how to do all the stuff that we've been doing all day professionally. And we do offer what one of our students called the Bridge to Tomorrow, and that is as many times, and it happens often, that we are actually producing a commercial, and we think, for example, some of our voiceover students would be right to audition for what we're doing. We'll bring them in. We do the same thing with animation, video games, audiobooks. If we're doing something and I've worked with you as a student and I think, wow, you know, she'd be really good for this, we'll bring you in and have you audition, and our people get their first jobs that way. So we're very interested in, our focus is to take our students and get them out into the real world and have a wonderful career. We don't just cash your check and say, gee, it's been nice, see you later, bye. We're very interested in getting you out there and working, giving you the tools so that you can in all the five disciplines of voiceover. And the other thing that's interesting about that, too, is it's all cross-training. There's everything you learn in commercial you can apply to animation, video game, audiobook, and conversely, everything you learn in audiobook you can apply to commercial. It's all about telling a story. So if you involve yourself in all five disciplines, you're going to be very, very strong if you go to the voiceover gym and learn those different techniques and training aspects of those disciplines. You're going to be a very strong talent and a very marketable talent. Versatility is the key. The more you can do, then the more you're going to work, because the more avenues you're available to work in.
Yes, it sounds as if the famous Radio Ranch does provide all those disciplines to be able to, you know, hone your craft and do what one needs to do to mm-hmm. be a success in the industry. What would you say, mm-hmm. if there is any misconception, those listeners that perhaps are interested in pursuing a voiceover career, what would you say is one misconception that you would like to correct about the industry?
Oh, that's very easy. It's an art form. The misconception is, well, how hard can this be? It's just talking.
Right, exactly.
That's a big misconception. Or everybody tells me I have a great voice, so I'm a shoo-in for voiceover. No. Not. It is an art form, and as an art form, it has to be studied and developed, and it is also, again, like any art form, it's a journey, not a destination. So as you become proficient at a certain level, part of gaining that proficiency is you then see that there's one more hill beyond the hill. And then you achieve another level of proficiency and you realize there are two more hills beyond the hill. And it just keeps going because you realize that there are other avenues you can explore. And as you develop as an artist, you should be discovering that there's more that you can learn, more that you can do with your craft to improve. It's when you stop learning that you're in trouble. You never stop learning. You will never know it all. It's impossible to know it all. There are different trends that come up in the industry in all five disciplines, and you need to be on top of those trends if you want to continue working and have your career continue to go forward. But the biggest misconception is how hard can it be? It's just talking. I've been doing that since I was a year and a half. That's easy.
That's easy. Well, you know, having taken a few classes at the ranch, I can say for myself that not only is it an opportunity to take all the craziness that I've had it all along as a child and put them in a particular puzzle that now fits. You know, it's that thousand-piece mm-hmm. puzzle on the table, and when you start putting
yes.
one piece together, then they all kind of come together, and you've completed this thousand-piece puzzle. But what I find, and it's so interesting, that being in the booth unleashes a sense of freedom. That's what I experienced, that it's your time to,
good.
Even though it's professional, you can play. The play and professional can dance together. And
well, they have to.
And I think it's a great opportunity, what I've experienced for self-exploration, to have your voice, to discover your voice, and
mm-hmm.
to be able to take the tools that you get from your expertise and your experience out in the world, and you're still connected to that world. It's not as if you've done what you've done and now you're retired and you're teaching, but you're still currently involved in what's going out on in the art form, that you can apply all these skills to many areas of your life and many other artistic endeavors.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Discipline is a terrific thing, and I have taken that forward with me from my dancing career, because that to me is the most extreme discipline. There's no way around it. If you're going to be a dancer, then you're in class every single day, and you're in rehearsal every single day, and you have performances 8 times a week on Broadway. That's the way it works, and that discipline is critical to succeed. You have to have that iron discipline. And that starts very early on. That starts at age 8. By age 8, you've got to make the decision as to whether or not you're going to be a dancer, because if you are, then you've got to start working on it right now and working on your technique, because everybody else is. And after you've gone through 10 years of that, you should be ready to go out and work. But it takes 10 years of learning technique, and that's just the technique and the discipline of learning that technique. You don't get to performance until you actually get out there and start performing. That's experience, and there's no substitute for that. But the discipline aspect of dance applies to every single art form out there, whether that is musicianship, whether that is writing, whether that is voiceover. And that is what separates the wheat from the chaff. It's people who have the discipline to do the homework, the reading out loud every day, and the grunt work of getting yourself out there and meeting agents and networking with other actors so that you can have that career. It takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline. And that
it's not
is
for sissies.
Any art form. No, it's not for sissies. And I'm fond of saying art is achieved through discipline. I think really voiceover and writing are the two most misunderstood art forms, because for voiceover, it's, well, how hard can it be? It's just talking. And in the writing world, I've discovered, particularly with the classes I teach in UCLA, the first thing that I tell my writing students when they come in is, if you think this is going to be easy, you're in the wrong place. There's a tremendous misconception about that art form, which is you just kind of sit there in front of the computer and it magically pops up on the screen with no effort on your part. Ha, 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 ha. No, that's a monastic existence at best, and that takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline to get that done. So discipline is critical in all aspects of the arts. It doesn't matter if you're doing one or 12, well, one or three or four of them all at the same time, you have to have the discipline in order to succeed, and you summed it up very well. It's not for sissies. There's no two ways about that.
Well, you give a great quote to your students from Margot Fonteyn, and I would love to just share it with everybody.
Mm.
Margot Fonteyn says, "Great artists are people who find the way to be themselves in art. Any sort of pretension induces mediocrity in art and life alike." And that just kind of sums it up right then and there. And Miss Laurel, I don't know where 30 minutes went, but somebody stole it and it is gone. It has been just a delight to have you on the show, and you'll have to come back and talk to us about, I know you just briefly mentioned a writing course at UCLA. You've written many young adult books, and I know you're working on a dance book, and would love to have you come back and share all of that with us.
Well, when I finish writing the book with the deadline of August 1st, that will be soon. I'll be happy to do that.
Excellent, excellent. And if people want to get in touch with you, which they should because you have a lot to offer, and find out more about some voiceover courses at the famous Radio Ranch, they can call 661-600-3365. Once again, Laurel, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Lauren. Back at you.
Back at you. Okay. Once again, a big thanks to Laurel Vanderlyn. If you want to contact Laurel and ask her some fascinating questions about the voiceover industry, please do so at 661-600-3365. And please join me next time for another wild and fascinating journey in someone else's shoes when my guest will be singer-songwriter Keith Chagall. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining us today and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I hope you find comfort in your own shoes. We're going to leave you with Keith Chagall, by the way, and his song Full Moon Rising.
You gotta